Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not the result of work in the Lord? Even though I may not be an apostle to others, surely I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defence to those who sit in judgment on me. Don't we have the right to food and drink? Don't we have the right to take a believing wife along with us? As do the other apostles and Lord's brothers and Cephas. Or is it only I and Barabbas who lack the right to work for a living? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat its grapes? Who tends to a flock and does not drink the milk? Do I say this merely on human authority? Doesn't the law say the same thing? For it is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. It is about oxen that God is concerned. Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Yes, this was written for us, because whoever ploughs and threshes should be able to do so in the hope of sharing in the harvest. Even someone spiritually seated among you, is it too much if we reap a marital harvest from you? If others have the right of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? But we did not use this right. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. Don't you know that those who serve in the temple get their food from the temple, and that those who serve at the altar share in what is offered on the altar? In the same way, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. But I have not used any of these rights, and I'm not writing this in hope that you will do such things for me. For I would rather die than allow anyone to deprive me of this boast. For when I preach the gospel, I cannot boast. Since I am compelled to preach, woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. If I preach voluntary, or have a reward. If not voluntary, I'm simply discharging the trust committed to me. What then is my reward? Just this is preaching the gospel. Am I, if it's of charge, and so not make full use of rights as a preacher to the gospel?
Fabian, just chuck it there. Yeah. Cheers. Hey guys, happy Sunday. It is good to be with you reading the Word together. I want to ask you, by the way, my name is Tim. I'm the senior pastor here. If I haven't met you, I'd love to meet you. Even though all you young people just like to meet each other and hang out in your own little groups after the service, if you'd like to meet me, come and say g'day. First question I'd like to ask you tonight. So should you claim your rights or lay them down? Should you claim your rights or lay them down? When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, my dad had worked for IBM for 26 years, and he finished up working for IBM, and he went into business with a friend of his. So he worked for his friend, who was a businessman from London, and they would sell training to different companies around the world. And my dad was on a commission, so it meant that if he brought a new client into the business, and when they signed on the dotted line, my dad would get 15% of that, you know, what that client was bringing into the business. So it was a pretty good deal. And my dad had this client all set up, this contract all ready to go with a company in Japan. And he was planning on flying there on Thursday and signing on the dotted line. And it would have been a great payday for my dad. And so he called them up on the Tuesday and just said, look, just want to confirm everything's all good for me to arrive on the Thursday and we'll sign the contract with you guys. And they said to him, oh, that's strange. He said, what's strange? They said, well, your boss has just flown in from London and he's just signed the contract with us. Now, what that means is the boss had gotten my dad out of his commission. He'd snuck in, swooped in, and stolen that commission from him. And so I remember my mum telling me this story, and we're chatting about it, and we're bumping around this question. Well, as Christians, what do we do? What do we do when our rights aren't being recognized? When our rights are being trampled by others? When we're not getting what we deserve, should you claim your rights or lay them down? And I think the answer that we get from this passage is yes. Yes. Yes, you should claim your rights. And yes, you should lay them down. So when do we do what? Well, let's try to get there together. The backstory in the passage is that Paul, his apostleship is being questioned. So this happens all throughout 1 and 2 Corinthians. The Corinthian church was a church that Paul had founded. He'd gone to Corinth, which is in Greece. He'd preached the gospel. People had become Christians. And then now there was a church there. But they kept asking the question, is this Paul guy really an apostle after all? I mean, he looks like an apostle. He talks like an apostle. But sometimes he doesn't really act like an apostle. And one of the issues with Paul is that he wasn't willing to take a paycheck. So they expected in that day and age that someone who was a religious teacher would be paid by their followers. That was normal in the religious world. A rabbi would be paid by his or her disciples. And in the secular world, a philosopher would be paid by his or her students. And Paul would reject the idea of receiving a paycheck. In fact, what Paul did was he was a tradesman. He was working as a tent maker or a leather worker. And he even had some friends in Corinth, Priscilla and Aquila, a married couple. They had a leather working shop in Corinth. And so when he'd go to Corinth, he wouldn't be paid by people. He'd go and he'd work in the leather working shop. He'd do his labor. He'd get paid that way. He'd pay his own way. And the church wouldn't be able to pay him a paycheck. And so they started to ask, well, what's this all about? Is he really an apostle after all? See, Paul wasn't employing the prestige pricing model, if you know anything about business. There's such a thing called the prestige pricing model. It's where you make the price of your product quite high so that people will think it's a good product. Apple does it all the time, by the way. That's why Apple products cost more than the equivalent Samsung products. They're just using the prestige pricing model. Paul did not use this model. He priced his services very low. He said, you don't need to pay me anything at all. And the effect was the opposite of the prestige pricing model, where people weren't saying, wow, what a great product that we're receiving from this wonderful Apostle Paul. They were saying, is he really the real deal? Is he an apostle after all? And so in our passage, what we have is Paul giving a defense of his own ministry. He's giving a defense of his right to be paid and compensated for his own work. And then he's giving a defense as to why he's laying down that right. A defense of his ministry, a defense of why he deserves to be paid, and yet then a defense of why he is laying down that right in the end. So we learn a lot about rights through the passage. The first thing I think we learn about is this connection between rights and freedom. Paul starts off by saying this in verse 1. Am I not free? Am I not free? Why do you think he starts there? Rhetorical question. Good, you didn't answer. You picked it up. Am I not free? Freedom is connected with rights. People who have rights have freedoms. People who have freedoms have rights. For example, right now you have the freedom to move around Australia. You have the right to movement. If you commit a crime and get put in jail, you will lose that right. In this case, rights and freedoms mean the same thing. And Paul starts off his argument in demanding that they recognize that he is himself free. He could be doing his apostolic ministry, and he could not be doing his apostolic ministry. He could be doing it for payment, and he could be not doing it for payment. It's his choice what he does with his own body, with his own time, with his own energy, with his own resources. It's his choice. He's saying, I am free. And freedom is a fundamental idea at the basis of our understanding of rights. When we lived in Russia, I was communicating with some of our students at our discipleship center about a similar idea. And I had this one student, her name was, well, let's say her name's Anna. And she put up her hand and she said, can I just sort of tell my story? I said, sure, Anna. She goes, well, look, I'm a nurse and I work at the hospital. And then at lunchtime, I go and sit in the common room for the nurses and I pull out my lunch. And then an older nurse, every day, looks over at my lunch and goes, "Ooh, what's for lunch?" And I tell her what I'm eating for lunch. And then she says, "Well, that looks nice." And then I feel obligated every time to say to her, "Would you like some?" And she says every time, "Oh, now that you're offering, I guess I would." And so I split my lunch and give her half of my lunch every single day. I don't want to do it, but I have to do it because she asks me for it. I said to her, "Well, Anna, you don't have to do it. You're free. You could decide tomorrow to never offer her lunch again, even if she asked for it. You could say, 'No, I've only got enough for me.'" And Anna really did only have enough for her. She wasn't paid well. She didn't have the money to be feeding two people every lunchtime. And so she would go hungry because she felt obligated to feed this other person lunch. I said to her, "Why don't you go to another common room? Why don't you go somewhere else and quickly eat your lunch and then go back, and then this older nurse will just be hungry and then maybe she'll learn to bring her own lunch." She said, "No, I can't do that to her. I can't do that to her. And I can't not offer her food. This is just the situation that I'm stuck with. Unfortunately, I failed at communicating to Anna about her rights and about her freedoms." Rights are also connected with identity. Paul goes on to say in verse 1 and 2, "Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Even though I may not be an apostle to others, surely I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord." Here Paul underlines his own identity as an apostle. He's saying, "This is who I am." And he gives two pieces of evidence. He says, one, "I've seen the Lord." It was a criteria, it was part of the criteria for being an apostle in the New Testament, was actually seeing Jesus face to face. And Paul had had an experience on the road to Damascus where Jesus had appeared to him. He said, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And then Jesus had commissioned Paul to become an apostle to the Gentiles. Paul's saying, because of that experience, I am an apostle. But he's also giving a second piece of evidence. He says, "If I'm not an apostle to others, surely I am to you. You are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord." He's saying, "You're proof that I'm an apostle because I planted your church. And your church exists. And that's proof that I'm an apostle, because an apostle is a church planter." And so he's saying, there you go, two pieces of evidence that prove my identity as an apostle and therefore my ability to demand the rights associated with being an apostle. I remember years ago I was standing in a line at Macquarie University. And I got chatting with some other students in the line. And I started talking about how awesome is the HEX system, don't you think? You know, it's just awesome. I've since traveled all over the world and talked to all sorts of people about the HEX system, and I haven't found a better system, in my opinion. I think it's the best system in the world. You might disagree. If you disagree, come and tell me afterwards. I'd love to learn why you think so. But the problem was that the person I was chatting to about the HEX system in this university line was an international student. And she said to me, "Well, we don't get the HEX system." And she said, "We're treated as like second-class citizens." And that just really stuck with me. That's why I've remembered it for about 20 years. I had to go and research, are they being treated as second-class citizens or not? I don't think so. I think they're just being treated as not citizens of Australia. And I'm not saying that the international students are treated well. Sometimes I think they're not. And I think we could do better. But it was an awareness that I suddenly had of my identity as an Australian citizen granting me certain rights in this country, including the right to the HEX system. And I started to be grateful for my identity as an Australian citizen, for that citizenship, something that I think many young people today aren't really grateful enough for. How wonderful it is to have been born in this country and to be granted citizenship, something that we need to be grateful for. Rights are connected to your identity. They're connected to your freedoms. They're also connected to the idea of equality. Paul says this, "This is my defense to those who sit in judgment on me. Don't we have the right to food and drink? Don't we have the right to take a believing wife along with us, as do the other apostles and the Lord's brothers and Cephas? Or is it only I and Barnabas who lack the right to work for a living?" Paul's argument is that I have the same rights as the other apostles. By nature, the idea of rights is connected to equality. It means that you have the same rights as other people. That's the idea. As other people in your category, you've got the same rights as them. For Paul, he's saying this includes food and drink, the opportunity to take a believing wife along with me on my missionary journeys, and the right to not work for a living. It's essentially all the same thing. He's saying, I'm a Christian missionary and I deserve to be compensated, to be paid for what I'm doing. I deserve to be supported financially by the local church for the ministry I'm doing, both me and my family. He's saying, I share this right with the other apostles. There's an inherent equality that exists when we talk about rights. You have the same rights as the other people who are in the same situation as you. And it's interesting that Paul may have even been discriminated against here because of his singleness. It might be that the other apostles are going around with their families, with their wives, and so people could imagine supporting them. But Paul, well, he's a single guy. Maybe he can just work for himself. Maybe he can pay his own way. Just this week, I heard stories in Australia of nurses from several generations ago. And the nurse that I heard about was a single person. And she was saying that the married nurses back in the day were sent home at around 4 p.m. because they had a husband and they had kids to look after. But for her, she was expected to stay at work until 10 p.m. and wasn't paid more for those extra hours. That's this kind of discrimination that goes completely against this biblical concept of rights and equality. And you might be saying, Tim, why are you talking about rights? Isn't this church? Shouldn't we be talking about spiritual things? And I want to say to you that rights are a spiritual thing, and it's something that the Christian church has given to the world. If you go and look up human rights on Wikipedia and scroll down to the history section, you'll see a whole lot about Christian theology because it was the church that gave the concept of rights to the world. And that's why we need to be clear on it as we read Scripture. So rights are connected with freedoms, with identity, with equality. It's also connected with rewards. And this is where Paul gets to the crux of the matter. His idea here is that if you work, you deserve a reward. If you work, you deserve a reward. That's your right. And he uses 6 illustrations to prove that point. It's amazing. I don't think I know anywhere else in the Bible where there are 6 illustrations listed one after another to prove the same point. It must mean a lot to Paul. I'll read it out to you and I'll count with my fingers the 6 illustrations that prove the point that if you work, you deserve a reward. Verse 7, who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat the grapes? Who tends a flock and does not drink the milk? Do I say this merely on human authority? Doesn't the law say the same thing? For it is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. Is it about oxen that God is concerned? Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Yes, this was written for us because whoever plows and threshes should be able to do so in the hope of sharing in the harvest. So that's the idea here, is that if you work, you deserve a reward. The oxen comment deserves special attention because here Paul is quoting from the law of Moses, from the Old Testament, and he's quoting from this law that was written thousands of years BC about protecting the rights of animals. It's amazing. And that the way it works is you would use an ox, a big heavy bovine animal. An ox is bovine, I don't know, this big heavy animal. And the ox would be brought in and would tread on the grain. And the point was that the heaviness of the ox treading on the grain would then separate the kernel of grain from the chaff around the grain. And then what you could do is you could remove the ox and you could throw that with a shovel, throw that up in the air, and the wind would blow away the chaff and you'd be left with the pure grain. Now, while the ox was doing that, the ox would be looking down at all this yummy grain and be going, oh, this is a pretty good job, and be eating the grain. And some wise guy came up with the idea, hey, why don't we put a muzzle on the ox? That way we'll be able to get the ox to do all this work, but it won't be able to eat any of the grain. And God said, don't do that. Don't do that. There's a principle that matters to God, and that is if you are working, you deserve to be paid. If you are working, you deserve to be paid. This is the problem with communism. You didn't think we were going to go there, did you? The problem with communism is it disconnects work and payment for work. In a free economy, the more you work, the more you get paid. The better you work, the better you get paid. The less you work, the less you get paid. In communism, you work as hard as you're told, and then you're paid what the government thinks you deserve. And there's often no connection between your work and the reward for your labor. So much so that customer service is almost non-existent in communist countries. Because in a free market, a customer walks into the store and the staff should know we need more of these kinds of people coming into the store. You know, we need this person to come back again. My pay is connected with how well we serve this person who walks into the store. You know, so I'm going to try to serve them well. We've even got a statement saying the customer is always right, because we want our staff to understand, no, you've got to serve this customer well so that we can actually pay you well. Of course, in a communist country, the customer is always wrong. And I noticed that living in Russia, we lived there after communism, but just even moving there after communism, it took years before we saw a single customer service representative smile in our direction. Years, they would frown, because in communism, ideally, this customer would never come back again. You know? Like, they're bothering your day. And, like, they're now in your shop. You have to do stuff for them. Gee, I really would hope that they'd never come back. And it's not going to impact your pay at all. One time, I was in a store in a little village. And the guy it was a general store. And I said to him, I need a kilo of apples. And he looked down at the floor. And there was a box of apples near his feet. And he kind of looked at me and sighed. And he bent down and picked up the apples and got me a kilo of apples and then came up and gave it to me and sighed again. And I sort of said, oh, I also need a kilo of oranges. And there was a box next to the apples by his feet. And he blasted me for it. He said, why didn't you tell me when I was down there getting the apples? Little example of communist customer service for you. Where's the problem? The problem is we're not connecting reward with work. And it's a biblical idea. I want you to get this. It's a biblical idea that you work and you're rewarded for that. It is a fundamental human right, a right to work and a right to be rewarded for your work. So where are we up to? Rights are connected with freedoms, with identity, with equality, and with rewards. Rights are important. They're a biblical concept that we have given to the world. When you work, you deserve to be compensated. Your rights should not be trampled by others. If they are, then sometimes it is right for you to speak up about it. That's what Paul is doing here, and sometimes it's right for you to do that in your own life as well. Paul then plainly applies this to his spiritual work as well. He says this in verse 11, if we have sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much that we reap a material harvest from you? If others have this right of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? But we did not use this right. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. Don't you know that those who serve in the temple get their food from the temple? And that those who serve at the altar share in what is offered on the altar? In the same way, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. Paul argues that spiritual work is also work. He uses agriculture as a metaphor. He's saying we're sowing spiritual seed and we should be therefore entitled to reap a material harvest. He's essentially saying that the preaching and teaching of Scripture, of the good news of the gospel, is worthy of pay. In that sense, it's just like other work. Being a pastor or a missionary is just like being a psychologist or a school teacher or a carpenter. If you genuinely work for the good of others, you deserve to be paid for that work. And he uses the illustration of priests in a temple. I find it quite amazing that he does this. He says, it's like the priests in the Old Testament temple. The priests were paid through a tithe of the agricultural produce from the general population was brought into the temple and given to the priest. And then also when a priest was offering a sacrifice, if you brought an animal to be sacrificed, the priest would actually be able to eat part of the meat that was cooked in that sacrifice and share it with his family. Paul's saying the same principle applies to us today. Spiritual work is work, and it deserves to be compensated. when we were missionaries in Russia, we were supported by Christians from Australia who saw what we were doing as valuable and wanted to support us in the ministry that we were doing. And we always saw them as partners in the gospel. It was amazing. It was such a privilege for me to look over at the end of a month, look over at the previous month and see the names of the people that had supported us financially and see the numbers that they'd given. But I remember noticing that the numbers didn't matter nearly as much to me as the names. As long as the numbers kind of vaguely equaled the total that we needed, that was fine. I even if someone was just giving $5 a month, the fact that their name was on that list meant so much to me because they were a partner with me in the ministry of the gospel. Paul says this in verse 14, in the same way, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. He's probably talking about Matthew 10 and Luke 10, where Jesus says the worker deserves his or her wages. The worker deserves his or her wages. And Jesus specifically uses that sentence in the context of Christian ministry. The worker deserves his or her wages. But it applies to everyone. And it applies to you too. You deserve to be paid for the work that you're doing. That is your right, and it should not be taken away from you. You are free. You are made in the image of God. You are equal with others. If you've been working, you deserve payment. Now, before we get to Paul's willingness to lay down his rights for the sake of the gospel, let me offer you some ideas as to why you might choose to claim your rights and fight for them. One, you deserve it. If you're getting less than what you deserve, that fact in and of itself is reason enough for you to stand up for yourself. If the context is right, if you think this is the best thing, to stand up for yourself and say, I deserve more than what I'm getting. That's reason enough. Reason number two, you'll affect the culture. When everyone is respected, that is good for everyone. When someone is disrespected by a group, that is bad for everyone. Someone came up to me after the morning service and said, thank you so much for that message. I'd been getting bullied at work, and I've finally chosen to speak up about it. And so this was very timely for me. The third thing I want to say is that your progress, the progress that you make, will help those who come after you. And the fourth thing I want to say is remember that much of the progress of human history has come from oppressed peoples demanding that their rights be respected. And often it has been the Christian faith at the forefront of those movements. The civil rights movement in the US was led by a Baptist pastor named Martin Luther King Jr. as one example. Okay, so when to lay your rights down? Paul says this in verse 15, but I've not used any of these rights. And I'm not writing this in the hope that you will do such things for me. For I'd rather die than allow anyone to deprive me of this boast. Paul makes it clear that he's not writing this out of a desire for personal gain. He actually doesn't want them to pay him. He just wants them to understand why he deserves to be paid, and then he wants to lay that right down. And the reason is simple. He says, I don't want anything to get in the way of the gospel. He says this in verse 12, we did not use this right. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. I love that. Hinder the gospel of Christ. The image is that the gospel, the good news about Jesus, is moving forward in the world. It is going out into the world. And we don't want to put an obstacle, a blockage, in the way that would hinder the movement of the gospel out into the world. It seems that Paul is imagining if he went into a new town like Corinth and he started preaching the gospel and sharing about Jesus with people and healing the sick and casting out demons and whatever he did, and then he started saying immediately, oh, by the way, that'll be $5. That would have put a barrier, a hindrance, an obstacle in the way of his ministry. And so he wanted to do it free of charge. He wanted to not let anything get in the way of the forward movement of the gospel in the world. And the same is true for us. If you're wondering, should I claim this right? Should I fight for what I deserve? Should I stand up for myself or not? One key question I want you to ask is, would fighting for your rights in some way hinder the forward movement of the gospel into the world? Would fighting for your rights in some way hinder the forward movement of the gospel into the world? I had a friend who was unfairly dismissed from his company. He'd been there for a number of years, and he'd been talking to people about Jesus. All the other staff knew that he was a Christian. And then he believed he was unfairly dismissed. And so he had a choice. Do I file for unfair dismissal? Do I sue this company or not? And it was a significant influence on his choice when he thought, well, they all know I'm a Christian. I've always been talking about how wonderful and loving and kind Jesus is. This could get in the way of my gospel witness. And so he decided not to. Now, I'm not saying that that applies in your case, and you also should not file for unfair dismissal. I'm not saying that at all. That's a decision that you need to make in your own conscience, in your prayer life, and with the support of others around you. But this is just an example of why you might choose not to pursue the rights that God has given you. Laying down your rights means trading one reward for another. Paul says this, I'd rather die than allow anyone to deprive me of this boast. For when I preach the gospel, I cannot boast, since I'm compelled to preach. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. If I preach voluntarily, I have a reward. If not voluntarily, I'm simply discharging the trust committed to me. What then is my reward? Just this, that in preaching the gospel, I may offer it free of charge, and so not make full use of my rights as a preacher of the gospel. Paul is saying that when he rejects a paycheck for his Christian ministry, that matters, and it matters before God. He's saying, I need to preach the gospel. I have this compulsion to preach the gospel. It's something that I have to do, but I've got a choice. Will I charge for it, or will I do it freely? And when I do it freely, all of a sudden I have this boast. I think that means I've done something good. I've chosen the high road in some way. And God sees that, and God rewards that. He switches from the language of boasting to the language of reward. He's saying, God sees what I'm doing, and he rewards me for it. And so I get this idea that when you choose to lay down your rights for the sake of the gospel, you're giving up an earthly reward and gaining a heavenly reward. You're trading one reward for another. Jesus said this in Mark 10, truly I tell you, no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age, homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children, and fields, along with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. Jesus is saying that our sacrifices matter to God. What we sacrifice for the sake of Jesus and the gospel, God counts those sacrifices, and he rewards us for the sacrifices. And I don't know how he counts them, the sacrifices or the rewards. But I do know the ratio between sacrifice to reward. It is 1 to 100. For every sacrifice, God rewards us 100-fold. Again, I don't know how he counts the sacrifices. I don't know how he works out the rewards. But I do believe, simply believe, the truth that Jesus speaks to us. And so when we give up our rights, when we lay them down in this world, we're trading one reward for another. And so when should we do it? When should I fight for my rights? And when should I lay them down? I told you we were going to ask that question at the start of the sermon. And my answer is, I don't know. This is the point where the effectiveness of preaching on a Sunday ends. Because I don't know your situation. I don't, and even if I did, it's not my job to make this decision for you. It's yours. My encouragement for you, if you're in a situation where you need to think this through, is to pray about it a lot, is to consult with your conscience. Joe talked about conscience last week. Think about what do you see as the right thing to do in this situation. If you make a decision and do something that you see as the wrong thing to do, that is damaging to you internally. What do you think is the right thing to do for you in this situation? And of course, speak to other Christians about it. This is one thing that I think the life group can do amazingly well. You go to your life group and you say, hey guys, I've got a situation like Tim mentioned on Sunday. and I'd love to chat this through with you. If that's too sensitive, just if the situation's too sensitive, just a Christian friend or one of the pastoral team or just your life group leader or your youth leader, whoever it is, go and get godly counsel about whether you should fight for your rights or whether you should lay them down. Both are valid actions for the Christian. And may God give you wisdom as you reflect on which action to take. I want to close with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus was being arrested by these soldiers. They'd surrounded him and his disciples. And the disciples start pulling out their swords and wanting to fight back. And Jesus says these words in Matthew 26, 53. Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? He's saying, put away your swords. I'm willing to lay down my rights, but it's not out of weakness and fear. It's a power move. Laying down your rights is an expression of a powerful person deciding that I can choose what I'm going to do with my own body, my time, my resources. I'm free, and I'm choosing in this case to lay down my rights for the sake of others. And that is, of course, what Jesus did by going to the cross for you and for me. He laid down his rights in freedom, in love. It was his own decision. He says in John, no one takes my life from me. I willingly lay it down. It might have looked helpless and weak to the people arresting him, but it was the most powerful thing ever done. And so when we lay down our rights for the sake of the gospel, I want you to remember that God keeps count and he ultimately rewards us in his grace and love. We're now going to come to a time of communion. As we do, I'd like to invite you to reflect for a few moments, reflect on what God has spoken to you about through this message, but also spend some time praying and repenting of your own sin so that you're ready to come and receive communion with us in a few moments. So just a time of quiet prayer and reflection.